ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the UI Breakfast Podcast. I'm your host, Jane Portman, and today our special guest is Francesca Gaines, the founder of Digital Dragonfly, which is a technology and productivity consultancy. And as you can imagine, we're going to talk about productivity today.
This episode is brought to you by Tiny Reminder, a simple productivity tool for freelancers and consultants. Need content or files on time? Tiny Reminder will play bad cop for you with friendly notifications. It works great for collecting content, feedback, files, bios, or anything else. What's best? This tool is forever free. Sign up today at tinyreminder.com.
Hi, Francesca.
Hi, Jane. How are you?
Doing great. Thank you for making it today for us.
That's brilliant to be here.
So, Francesca, let's start with a short questionnaire. The first question is, what do you do for a living?
What do I do? I run a technology and productivity consultancy called Digital Dragonfly, and I've been doing that for 6 years, specialized in working with consultants and independents and making sure that they have the right tech tools and productivity techniques in place to do their work.
Sounds great. How did you get there? How did you decide to focus on productivity?
I think it's something I'm naturally very interested in. When I set up the business 6 years ago, it was at a time when cloud technology was really becoming very mainstream. And it was also the depths of the recession here in the UK. A lot of people were starting to set up businesses on their own. Co-working spaces were starting to open up in London, and cloud services and just technology becoming cheaper was allowing people to be very portable and mobile and run a business from a home office kitchen table. And so there was this whole new generation of business owners, a lot of them having left, you know, really good careers in corporate life to set up on their own. And that really appealed to me. And I liked the fact that they had kind of unique tech challenges and productivity challenges, I suppose. And I wanted to work with that client base.
What did you do before that time?
So I had a career in the art world. Not many people realize that I actually have a PhD in art history. And I spent many years working in the London art world. Before that, I also even spent a year working at Goldman Sachs in New York. So I have a varied range of interests and kind of skill sets. And the move from art to technology was an interesting one. I mean, I was going back from maternity leave, and really it was a time to make a big change and to set up in a way that allowed me to be much more flexible to manage work family life balance, I suppose. And so setting up my own business at the time was the right thing to do. And even though I worked in the arts, I was always the one in the office going, why are we doing this like this? Isn't there a better way? Can't we talk to IT about changing X, Y, and Z of our systems? So I've always been very interested in how the work is done. And so I suppose that's kind of where I'm going, you know, where I'm kind of going with this business now. So it's nice.
Great. I guess that makes you a more interesting and diverse consultant in that area then.
A consultant who can talk to you about arts, yes.
What does your typical day look like?
My typical day, I suppose it's a lot of it is geared around, I've got two young kids, and so a lot of it is geared around getting them to and from school and then using the rest of my time as efficiently as possible to run the business, but equally, you know, have a bit of time for myself to exercise. So I try and get up early before the kids get up, though my youngest is challenging that. He seems to be an early riser, whereas it doesn't come naturally for anyone else in the house. So I try and get up at 6 and have a bit of time to just, you know, catch up with myself, whether I do a bit of exercise or actually just crack on and do a bit of quiet work or writing. And then we kind of get into the whole morning routine for the kids, and then I get them off to school. And then I try and do a bit of exercise in the morning before I kind of fit in my work day. And then my work day is a mix of client calls, you know, writing for my blog, that kind of thing. There's the usual business admin. And then there's school pickup in the evenings, in the afternoon. And then maybe I, you know, catch up on a bit of work in the evenings if I take time out during the day for the kids. So it's I like that. I can manage my time and I don't mind doing a bit of work in the evenings if I've taken the afternoon off to watch matches at school, for example. So it all works out in the end.
Great. Well, so your client work consists of, well, your work consists of the part that you do for your own business, which is, you know, blogging, just doing marketing, other stuff, and client work. How does the client work look like? Is it mostly consultations or do you catch up other ways?
So it's all virtual. So I'm here in my home office in Kent and my clients are scattered across the UK and I've got a handful abroad as well, kind of going from California to Singapore, which is interesting. So the client work will be calls, remote, like calls with them where we do remote sessions on the desktop. And then depending on what needs to be done, it'll be more kind of almost mentoring type, coaching type work where we're trying to look at the way they use a tool or the way their workflows are set up and kind of questioning and refining that. Or it'll be more kind of, oh, look, I've got these errors or this is not working. And then it's more of a, you know, more of a support issue where we're fixing tech stuff or they want to buy a new computer and they need help setting it up. And so we have a session doing that. So sometimes the client's on the call with me and we're looking at stuff together. Sometimes it's just us doing the work and I work in the business with my partner and we also have like a help desk that can help with kind of more of the support side of things. So I try and do more of the consultancy work. That's what I really enjoy.
Great. That's the next question. What do you enjoy the most and the least about your work? Right.
What do I enjoy the most? I think what's really nice is the fact that it is, though it is an entirely virtual business and it is a tech type business, it's a very human business. So I'm working with my clients, I'm working with these people, and I'm playing a small part in their business journey, making sure that, you know, they are set up in a way that allows them to be productive and do their work. And that's very satisfying, helping people, you know, have these breakthrough moments where stuff's, you know, it's, the stuff is better for them after our session. They are able to do more work, feel more confident, get more done, have peace of mind as a result of, you know, what we looked at together. And I do find that very satisfying. I suppose what I enjoy the least, probably the kind of a lot of the admin stuff that comes with running a business. And even though I have outsourced a lot of it, there's still there's still admin to be done. I would say that's just not something I enjoy, but I know that it's important to do that and do it well. And that's all part of the business journey, I suppose.
What is your next big thing? What are you working on right now?
Oh, my next big thing. I'm very excited to be putting on a workshop for the first time, which I'm doing with one of my clients. And we're doing like a kind of masterclass on Trello, which is a tool I really love using, but very specifically for interior designers, which I think is very interesting to bring people together who are in a specific sector and to address their very specific issues in the way that they work and tackle their projects. And then to look at a particular tool and really apply it to workflows and methodologies that they, you know, that are right for them. So that's coming up and that's the first. So I'm curious to see how that goes. I've got a book idea in the back of my head. That's kind of coming to life. So
great. Yeah. What's the topic for the book?
Well, it'll be about productivity. So funnily enough, it'll be about productivity. And it's all just kind of suddenly falling into place, but I'm not sure I can articulate it in any more detail just yet. So stay tuned.
That sounds like a great big thing to attack.
It is actually a really big subject. But one that really interests me. So I suppose everybody has their own take on it. And I kind of feel like my view on it is emerging now. So that's good.
Awesome. So let's proceed to the main topic. Most of our listeners are designers or mm-hmm. somehow related to design. But in spite of specifically design tools, which I don't hope to get your review on, there is that bunch of productivity tools and setups that is common for everybody who is doing client work online. Mm-hmm. So for the whole big part, I'm hoping to get your take on that and maybe get your review on specific tools and setups. Mm-hmm. Can we do that?
Absolutely. Let's do it. Yeah, I love that stuff.
Great. So I know your most popular service is teardowns. When mm-hmm. you get started with a client, you tear down their situation. Can you give us a background if our listeners can do a similar teardown by themselves, maybe? Like what mm-hmm. review process do you follow?
Yeah, absolutely. It tends to have two parts. Clients tend to gravitate towards one of the two sides of the teardown process. So one side of it is more to do with like the tech side of the setup. So, you know, having a bit of a checklist to think about, you know, what hardware are you using and how old is it? You know, what does your workspace look like? Your monitor, the lighting, your chair. Have you got essentials in place like your backup? Is it really foolproof? You know, how manual is it? When's the last time you checked it? Your business emails, you know, are they set up in the cloud? Are they all synced up? How is that working for you? So looking at like really the core things. And some people really like to look at that and need help with that. But once all of that's in place, we get to the really good stuff, which is more the productivity teardown side of things, which is where I'm really focusing my attention at the moment. And that's to do with actually really drilling down. And we do remote sessions during these calls. And so I get to see for myself. And actually, I'm like, well, you know, show me your to-do list. What does that look like? What are the main tools that you're using to actually organize yourself? So it's not so much, you know, what are you using to do your work, but what are you using to organize your work so that you know what you need to do and you can get it done. And so you quickly kind of see when, you know, you do the remote session, whether you are faced with a desktop covered in shortcuts and clutter, or whether, you know, they want to show you their email inbox and they've tried various ways of organizing it, but is still overwhelmed with the number of unread emails and not sure what the best way is to manage that process of, you know, getting to inbox zero, if that's what they want to achieve, or how to even start sorting that out. Or to, you know, some people will really love tech tools and they might try out lots, but then never really commit to one properly. And so stuff tends to be a little bit scattered. And so it's like really drilling down into like, well, what information are you trying to track? What are you trying to do with this tool? Why is it not working for you? Or how are you using the one that you've chosen? And like really looking at how they're using it and then drilling down and looking at, have they made the most of the features? Is it because they're inputting stuff and it's not very clear? So I looked at one yesterday with someone. And so, you know, she had tasks that said things like MailChimp !! Look at emails !! So, you know, that's great. Yes, she needed to look at emails. And, you know, that's a whole different thing. But when I asked her about MailChimp, it was like, well, you know, she wanted to set up some new templates and she needed to get into a routine of sending her mailings out. Well, you know, putting MailChimp isn't going to help her take that forward. She needs to, you know, break that down into smaller, more meaningful tasks so that she can work towards that. So a lot of it then ends up being, you know, it's the tools are there. So the tools are one thing, but the tools are not enough. You need to use them and have kind of workflows and, you know, techniques in place or tricks, you know, things that trick you into remembering to do things using your diary effectively or having default diary, you know, default days and things. So it ends up being a real mix of looking at the tools, how they're using it, and then finding some productivity hacks that are right for them so they can really optimize their use.
Great. So you just mentioned a few huge areas that can be attacked. Well, one of them is the hardware setup. but we're not going to attack that since it's really big by itself. But you mentioned a few areas that need attention. For example, your to-do list, your email inbox, your project management, I don't know, potentially time tracking or something like that. Can we go over these areas one by one? And maybe you define your few possible approaches that the person can take there. I would love to start with the to-do list and the way to manage it. And I imagine there are people who might like different things. So you might must have, you know, different approaches in up your sleeve for them.
And I think this is actually, you've kind of summarized it beautifully. I think a lot of the reasons people get very stuck and overwhelmed with productivity is that, you know, there is no one size fits all, but a lot of the books and techniques out there are very like, this is the way to do it. This is the answer, but that might not be right for that person. And so people are endlessly reading up about the next way to do something in this just vain attempt to find what's going to be right for them. So I like to do all that reading and then work with the person and go, okay, well, try this. And no, you don't, you know, Pomodoros are great, but you can do it like this, or, you know, getting things done is great, but you don't need to follow it to the letter. You can take three principles and apply them, you know, in a way that suits you. So when it comes to to-do lists, I think, you know, I find that people tend to fall into two big categories. Some people are very list-based, very, very list-based, and also very good at setting due dates on all of their tasks, however small. And other people really can't or don't want, like, the list thing doesn't work for them, and setting the dates, they spend more time trying to set the date than actually just getting on with it. Some people I find are much more visual. And so I think there's that seems to be two big broad camps. And so we often end up comparing tools like, for example, something like Trello, or the whole kind of Kanban approach is a very visual one. And that will appeal to one set of people. And then there's other tools more like Asana or Todoist that are more in this kind of list-based approach. And actually what's really interesting is that Asana has introduced this kind of board view now as well, which allows you to toggle from one to the other. So there's a lot of options out there, and helping people like find the right interface is like step one. I mean, I'm sure, you know, this is something you must come across in your work a lot. If people don't like the interface, they will find it hard to use the tool and to enjoy using the tool. So I think a lot of it is to do with how much are people going to enjoy using the tool. They need to like it to then embrace it into their daily workflow.
That's right. Are there any common approaches of managing a to-do? For example, I don't know, I'm just going to state the one I use myself, and maybe you give me the others or something. So I tend to keep one huge to-do list of all strategic tasks, and everything that has a real-life deadline goes into my calendar. Sometimes I do like a smaller to-do in my notebook. Generally speaking, that's the approach. Are there any others, maybe, you know, to-dos set to the date and you rewrite them every day or something like that? What do you recommend?
I mean, some people really like going through a bullet journal where they're kind of constantly working through this list. Some people use the whole kind of Kanban to do doing done approach. Some people take the Kanban thing and untangle it so that it's not so much a to do doing done, but they take a lot of the different buckets that you might get in a GTD approach. So that you might have buckets like client, personal, out and about, you know, waiting for, and so that things are split in that way, and that you then from all of those buckets maybe look at it on a daily basis and write a physical bit of paper and go, okay, that's what I'm going to do today, and pick your top three and kind of work from there. I mean, some people, a bit like you mentioned, you know, putting things into the calendar, some people will totally block out their calendar literally from morning till night, everything in detail, including break times and everything, so that they literally, it's like following a timetable. And then if something doesn't get done or needs to be moved, then they're carrying the tasks over within their diary. Some people really can't work like that. Actually, I was working with someone earlier who said, you know, if I do it like that, I'm a rebel. And if I feel like my diary is in charge, then I will walk away from it and I will rebel and then I won't get anything done. So it's finding like the right balance. And so for her, it was a much better approach to have these buckets where she could look at it and go, okay, what have I got in the diary that is kind of non-negotiable, as in I have to turn up for an appointment or a meeting? What hours of free time do I have? And then look at her, you know, look at her list of buckets and go, okay, what are my most important tasks for the day? And then, you know, put them in that way. And combining something like that with kind of default blocks of time. So, you know, we all know that we need to do, you know, we need to check our emails, hopefully just a couple of times a day. So that needs to be allocated. We need to... Yeah, I mean, that's a huge topic, getting people to not check their emails all the time. But, you know, we all need to do a bit of business admin and a bit of bookkeeping. And, you know, if we're running, if we have a blog, we need to set time aside for writing. So we know that there are default blocks of time that are non-negotiable within any kind of week or month period. And then there is free time, obviously, that needs to be allocated very wisely based on our current priorities. And so... at the end of the day, a lot of it will boil down to whether or not you are able to focus enough on what those priorities are and then, you know, use that time wisely. So that's why the tools are never enough, unfortunately.
Since you mentioned you're a Trello lover or expert or something like that, I've never quite gotten to the point of Trello. Maybe the reason is that after you do everything, you end up with a blank board and a huge, like, last column where you just did everything, and that doesn't bring any kind of satisfaction visually. I always wonder, what should I do with that last column? Like, should I archive it? Should I, what,
yeah,
did,
just
what
archive
do I do?
It. Yeah, you don't need to see it anymore. It's done.
Basic ideas how we can do that for how we can use Trello for everyday work?
For everyday work, yeah, no, absolutely. So, you know, if you have your doing blocked done columns, you know, sometimes if it's too, you know, if you have too much on your plate, you can look at the to-do column and go, well, what, you know, how can, there's too much there for today. So like you said, you seem to also like take things out maybe into a notebook and write a kind of day list. I used to sometimes put a column in there just called today, and then I'd move stuff in there that was like my focus. And then, you know, be quite flexible with that. And the done list is great because I tend to archive stuff like at the end of the day or at the end of the week, depending on, you know, how it's going. Because, yeah, you don't want to see that building up. It's very satisfying, but equally you want to be like, okay, I've done all that now. I need to make space for stuff to move through. I think the reason people like Trello is because it's so visual. You can see where things are in the process. And so it's really important to have this blocked column in there as well, so that if something is, you're waiting for a response or somebody needs to get back to you, it's sitting there and you don't forget about that. And that's an important one. But, you know, so you can create a kind of waiting for category in other task managers as well to kind of capture that important information.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that sounds great. What's the best way to name that column? Is it waiting for or something like
that? I call it blocked. I think David Allen calls it waiting for. So yeah, either way, it's just so that you know. I think that one's really important because that's where people often drop the ball, is they'll send something off, maybe it's to a prospect or even to a client, and they need to come back to you for something to move forward. And if you don't chase, then, you know, there's consequences. So that's really important.
Mm-hmm. We are kind of gradually moving towards email. And I'd love to hear your take on what's the best way to manage your inbox to keep it organized, clean, and staying sane at the same time.
Oh, yeah. Where do we start? Oh, my goodness. Email. I think, yeah, checking it as little as possible if you can. Some people obviously do need to see if there's urgent stuff coming in. So it depends on, you know, obviously what kind of business you're in. Turning off notifications, I think, is really important in any case, because when you are not in email, you don't want to be interrupted by email. So you want to be able to give your full attention to whatever you're doing. When you are in email and it's time to process the email, I think when I work with clients, you know, one of the first things for everyone seems to be, okay, there's a lot of traffic coming in. Does it all need to be there? And questioning the newsletters and the, you know, the notification emails that come in and turning off, you know, you don't need to get an email every time somebody like something you've put on Twitter. You just don't. You can see that next time you look at Twitter. So turning off those type of default notifications and then unsubscribing to newsletters if you are not going to read them. Maybe setting up some rules for newsletters you do want to keep so that they bypass the inbox and go straight to a reading folder. Like that, you know they're there. It's not critical, but it's nice to do your reading and you can go to it at the allocated time, but it's not taking your attention from the more important stuff. I tend to work with an action folder. I find that's quite useful because it allows you to process your inbox and immediately look at what's coming in and either, you know, file it in reading, delete it, reply to it straight away if it's very quick, forward it to my assistant if it's something she can deal with, and then what should be left are the important emails that need a little bit more time to reply to, and they can go into the action folder, and they will then have, you know, associated tasks that go, you know, in the to-do list. And like that, you can process and go to inbox zero. I know you're on top of things, but you'll have a whole load of stuff sitting in your action folder. So it's not like you've done everything, but you know what you need to do and you can go to the action folder and everything of importance is there so that when it's time to work on it, you can focus and do that. And I mean, that's a very kind of simple way of approaching it, but very effective.
That sounds great. I'd like to mention one tool that saves a lot of, you know, brain power for me. It's called Unroll.me. Mm-hmm. I'll put the link up in the show notes. It rolls up all the newsletters of a single day into one email that comes into my inbox every day at 7 a.m. And I don't have to worry about newsletters at all. I guess Google tried to manage with that themselves by splitting them into a few tabs. But what's your take on those tabs?
I do think it's useful as long as you kind of check it to make sure that it's accurate. Though in a way, a lot of it, like the promotions tab, I would question whether that stuff needs to, you know, whether you should just turn off those notifications in the first place. I mean, Outlook is now doing it as well with their kind of focus view, and they're turning off clutter so that you can go to a focused inbox, and it is good. But reducing the amount of stuff coming in is still better. So yes, whether it's Unroll Me or having some filters move stuff to a reading folder is great.
By the way, the tabs I switched off very shortly after they were introduced, and I never looked back. My approach is very close to yours. It's unsubscribing from all these notifications rather than sorting them out somehow.
Yeah,
and I had a reading folder. Right, I used to have a reading folder, but I just caught myself on the idea that I never go there. So,
what do you do now? I mean, I, you know, it's the same. I often don't have as much time as I would like to go through it. But when I do blitz it, I know that everything's there and I can, you know, I tend to sort it by sender and then I can go, yeah, I really just want to see what, you know, you can just blitz through, pick out a handful of articles and then like bulk delete and process it. Yeah, I don't know.
Interesting.
I mean,
I go through my Enroll Me. Yeah, I go through my Enroll Me emails like once a day, once in a few days. And they have this wonderful way of presenting thumbnails for each email. Mm-hmm. So I can catch a glimpse of the newsletter without actually opening it. And I see like, oh, that's my friend. He wrote an article on the topic. That's the title. And that's here the first few lines. I'm fine. I don't need to read really. But, you know, it's a mental check mark that I'm aware of what's going on. And I guess that's what matters most.
Yeah. And I suppose the other thing to say in terms of getting stuff out of your inbox, you know, very often the stuff that people put out in a newsletter, they might be tweeting about it or, you know, putting it on LinkedIn or whatever. And so if you're already spending time on Twitter, you might be coming across that content in another way. So trying not to duplicate how you're seeing people's content is also useful.
Absolutely. For example, you might be reading RSS feeds in some aggregator tool, and then you don't need newsletters of respective authors.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. I'm a big fan of something called Feedly, which is a great RSS reader. And then from there, what's actually really nice about that one, I've got stuff coming in there, kind of tech news or productivity blogs. From there, it's connected to my Buffer account. So if I want to post, you know, share articles that I find interesting with Twitter or Facebook, I can do it straight through Feedly to Buffer, and then it's done. And that's a good time saver as well.
Fantastic. For client projects, most of people are used to using, you know, more complex project management tools that manage client feedback, steps, separate calendars, etc. Names that come to mind are probably Senna, Basecamp, etc. Can you give us a brief overview of that process and the popular tools?
Yeah, I think Asana is a really good one at the moment. I mean, that kind of comes into its own, like you say, when there's a team needing to communicate and work on things together. And there, with Asana especially, you know, you can have things broken down by projects and assign it to people, leave comments. And so a lot of the work can be done within the tool, eliminating the need to endlessly send emails and BCC people. And people can go and, you know, serve themselves when they want to access the information. Very often, you know, virtual teams now, even working in different time zones, it's not so much about being in the office at the same time, but people having access to what they need when it suits them. So I think tools like Asana are very good for that. I mean, and we need to mention Slack in there as well, which is obviously offers all sorts of great integrations. And that's a great one for team chat and comms and, you know, having conversations in different kind of different, you know, rooms so that people can access if they want to or contribute. And I think it's actually really valuable because very often with email, you know, you might be working with one colleague and just emailing each other. Whereas if it's happening in Asana or in Slack, other team members can see that and they might have valuable input that you otherwise wouldn't be, you know, open to. So I think it adds a lot of value.
Do you have any rules for somehow restricting or organizing Slack? Because it is a big time sink for many people because it boils down to chatting.
Yeah.
Any recommendations here?
Well, I think it's a tricky one. I think a lot of it comes down to almost team culture, corporate culture, if you want to call it that, expectations. I think the same applies to email, you know, making it clear that people don't need to, you know, it's like in an office, making it clear that it's not about, you know, how long you're there for, but the outcome of your work and setting those boundaries. And hopefully that's, if you're part of a team, then the team should be leading the way with those boundaries. If they're not, then I think you need to be very good at creating your own boundaries in terms of being aware of how much time it is to be appropriate to be chatting, whether you're chatting or whether you're actually communicating about a project in a meaningful way. And I'd say, I don't know, if I was running a Slack group for a virtual team, I'd try and, you know, have some guidelines about, you know, make sure that there is a kind of water cooler type area for that type of chat, but to make clear that there's clear channels for projects or whatever is relevant, and try and minimize. I think, I mean, Slack is a big time suck in the same way that email can be. So we need to be a little bit disciplined about how we use it.
Right. So there is no actual way to reinforce it.
I'm not just sure about there's corporate magic. Culture. I think it has to be a kind of corporate culture that, you know, leads by example, really, as to what's appropriate and what's expected, and not make people feel that the more time they are in a tool or working late, that that's not valued, that it's the actual results that are valued.
Mm-hmm. I know you're a certified expert in Evernote because I read your newsletter. And can you give us an overview how that can be used? Is it a tool that you recommend for just storing things or for managing things or for project management? I don't know. What are the most common use cases for it?
Yeah, Evernote's a very flexible tool. I think it can do great things from like the single user, where it's brilliant at organizing a whole load of data. So, you know, because you can forward emails, you can use the web clipper, you can add, you know, audio notes, you can add PDFs. So you can add a whole load of media and bring it in one place. Very often I find that people are endlessly bookmarking things or have notes scattered in different places, and then they have an email filing system as well as a bookmarks relating to a project, as well as images relating to a project. And actually, Evernote's the one thing that would allow a lot of that to be brought together. And so that's really valuable. From a team point of view, and certainly when I did the Evernote certification, it was very interesting to be really working in great detail on how you can set it up within quite, you know, large size teams to effectively share information. So, you know, if you have a company that has different departments, then departments can have notebooks that are available to others who need to get, maybe they need to get reports, or maybe the sales team needs to have access to the latest pricing or the latest designs. And so if there's a design team, they can share the latest, you know, the spring collection, and then the salespeople can access that as they need to when they're out and about on their, you know, phone app. And so it's a great way to, you know, stop departments not knowing who's got what, duplicating effort, having outdated versions of documents because they were emailed 6 months ago and then nobody knows that there's actually a new one available. So you can set it up and structure it in a way where there is, you know, key data that's available across the company or shared between individual departments if it's more sensitive. And you can also have some more limited but kind of chat functionality within it as well. So it is a nice tool.
Mm-hmm. As you mentioned, the most common use cases, I'm thinking that Google, like sharing things, for example, within a company. I know a lot of people use Google Drive, Google Docs, Google mm-hmm. Spreadsheets, etc., to do the same. Mm-hmm. And it's mm-hmm. a pretty common tool because it's very powerful and free. And I mm-hmm. can't really, it's hard to argue that. Can you mention your own opinion, pros and cons of using that as a baseline for your business organization?
What, the Google Docs suite?
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't say like it's good because it's free. I think the whole Google ecosystem can be great if you embrace it as an ecosystem. I think where it often goes wrong for people when they're trying to mix and match too many things. So when I'm working with clients and they're trying to make some big decisions about Google or Office 365, then it's good to understand how they work across, you know, different tools. So I often find that if people really like kind of Gmail type interface, then it makes sense to set them up with G Suite. And so that the email is run through Google Apps, and then they use, you know, the whole kind of suite of tools that are related to that. And then that's good because they're in that ecosystem and it all talks to each other, and it's keep it simple. It's lots of good integrations available as well. I find that if people like using kind of, say, Mac Mail or Outlook, and they like to organize things in folders, and maybe they've got some Dropbox stuff going on there, it often makes more sense to set them up in, you know, the Microsoft ecosystem. So Office 365, and then that would manage their back end for their email. They could use the Word and Excel documents if they need to, and save those, whether they want to use Dropbox or OneDrive or whatever. And then that seems to suit them best. I find that when people try and mix and match, then they're making their life complicated. And so it's best to just stick with one system if you can.
Absolutely. I heard your opinion right now that free tool is not the best tool. So can you elaborate a little bit on that?
Yeah, this is a bit of a bugbear of mine. So I think we've all been very spoiled in the world of tech. There's a lot of stuff which is great and which is free. So, you know, Dropbox will start you off on a free plan, and Trello is free unless, you know, so you kind of, there's lots of free, and people get spoiled with the free. And then they'll come to me and go, oh, my Dropbox is full, and what should I do now? Where should I put my data? And I'm like, well, no, you should just pay for it. Or, you know, I think if a tool has proven itself to the point where you've outgrown whatever they want to offer you for free in terms of space, or you need extra functionality, then it's proven itself. It's adding value to your business, and you shouldn't think twice about paying for that service. You know, running a business, it has business costs. So we need to pay for our web hosting. We need to pay for our accountants. You know, we need to pay for our Dropbox subscription. It's just one of those things. And so I often find that people ask me, like, I'd like your recommendation on a free tool for my CRM, or I need a free tool. And I'm like, well, let's look at what tools are right for you. And if they have a free offering, then great, start with that, and you can then grow into the paid for. But let's not let the free be our decision maker, because there might be a paid tool which offers you better functionality, and it'd be just worth your while paying. You know, I mean, that's the nice thing about cloud services. We get to pay just a little bit every month for the tool. And if we need more, we go to the next plan and we pay a little bit more. If we add team members, we add them. If we shrink the team or the project changes and we need less, we pay less. And it's so flexible. And I think we forget just how great that is. I mean, you know, not that long ago, that wasn't even an option. So, I'm forever telling people it's okay to pay for your cloud tools.
Absolutely. I remember the times when Photoshop was, it was irreplaceable, and it was more than $1,000, like one-off purchase. How can possibly, you know, a student who's starting out afford something like that? And now it's down to, I don't know, double digits monthly, very, very affordable the whole suite.
Yeah, it's great. And yeah, absolutely. That's amazing. Perfect example. It is great. And it's the same thing. I was speaking to someone the other day. They were like, well, I want to buy Office. Can't I just, you know, buy the box? You used to get a box. And it was like, I don't know how many hundreds of pounds. I'm like, well, that doesn't make sense, because you'll buy the box and then you're like, oh, I invested, and now I'm going to use that version for as long as I can. And so what used to happen in the past, all these people that bought their license in 2007, and, you know, Microsoft was coming out with all these new versions, Office 2010 and Office 2012, and they'd be like still using Office 2007 because they, you know, bought the box. And it's much better to just pay a little bit every month, be on the latest version, and, you know, stay with the times.
Absolutely. And as generally speaking, I see the problem that especially freelancers, consultants who are just starting out, they don't call themselves consultants usually. They think that they can run the business only on free tools, and there is a like psychological barrier about paying for things. But you should treat yourself as a business, and like you mentioned, you should have business investments, business expenses. You can buy books, you can buy software. That doesn't have to be thousands of dollars, just a little bit of cash to kind of be higher quality lifestyle within your business.
Absolutely. No, I couldn't agree more. I still, every time I see a business that has a website, but then is using like a Gmail address or Hotmail, BT Internet, you know, like a free email address, my heart just sinks because they're really making it hard for themselves to sell themselves and to come across as trustworthy and professional if they haven't even bothered to set up, you know, business email. And I mean, that's like the worst kind of example. But yeah, you're absolutely right. Investing in professional tools that, you know, will allow you to compete with bigger competitors is really important. You don't want to come across as the, you know, cheap freelancer. You want to be seen as a professional business, despite your size.
Right. And what's worse, you can see, you know, email addresses, something like naughtygirl92 or something like that. Yeah. I see that with my eyes among professional people, and that really is not fun.
No, it's really not good. No, I'm like forever on this mission to get people onto decent email. I feel like email, it's so important. It's like at the heart of your business. So you need to get it right.
For a person who has their own website, your name at your website, it's a single business card by itself. It already tells everything there needs to be. Your name, your business name, and the place to reach out, the immediate inbox, and the site you can be found at. That's like no-brainer.
Yeah, exactly.
To make it right.
it's beautiful marketing. Exactly. Whereas if somebody's sitting there with a Gmail address, they're like, oh, so who was that again? What did they do? I can't even look them up. You know, yeah, no, you're right.
You mentioned CRM systems. I would love you to give a brief overview of the ones you recommend.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so again, you know, if you Google like small business CRM, you literally just get like millions of returns. It's a massive area, and there's so many tools out there. I always say to people before they even start Googling or reading through all those lists that they need to get a really clear idea of what it is they're trying to achieve. Because even though they'll all cover the same kind of maybe core functionality of, you know, allowing you to record somebody's first name, surname, email address, and phone number, they all will have their own little niche or speciality. So some of them will be much more focused on, you know, the whole sales side of things. Others will be much more focused on, you know, notes and tasks relating to particular things. So they'll all have their little angle. Some will be more like a social CRM because they offer lots of integrations with social media sites. And so you need to be clear what it is you're looking for and also why you're asking. So is it because you've outgrown your current system? And if so, like, what is it that's not working for you there? Is it because you're currently using a spreadsheet and you need extra functionality? So like, what is it about the spreadsheet that's not working for you? Or maybe it's because you've never used one before and you can see everyone else using it and you just want to CRM, but you don't know why. And that's like, that's the worst. So I often say to people, you know, start with a spreadsheet. It's really boring, but you will soon find out what's not working, what you can't track, or you'll soon find out what it is you do need to track, and then you'll know which tool to go and find. So some really good ones that I like, for example, would be Capsule CRM. That's probably my favorite at the moment. There's Nimble CRM. I used that for a long time. That's much more social. That has some lovely social integrations. There's Pipedrive. There's OnePage. There's loads. It's Insightly. I mean, there's loads, and they're all a little bit different. I won't mention things like Salesforce because that I think really only comes into its own in very large corporates where it's totally customized. Mm-hmm. I'd say, right. Yes. Keep it simple, be clear on what you want, and also look out for, you know, they'll all have different types of integrations. So, you know, if do you want your CRM to be linked up to, if you're selling something online, does it need to integrate with whatever online payment portal you're using? Does it need to integrate with your bookkeeping service? Does it need to integrate with your mailing list? So you need to kind of know what is and isn't important so that when you're comparing, you can see which ones offer which integrations.
Right, you kind of answered my question. So whenever you are in doubt whether you need specific software for solving a problem, the ideal thing is not to you know, start searching for it, but instead try to replicate it using, you know, spreadsheets or documents, simply.
Try and get
trying
really
to reconstruct
clear.
What you need, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a great piece of advice.
And then you have
a
shopping list.
Exactly. What are the best places online to shop for software, generally speaking? Or are there any?
Oh, I don't know. I think it's good to ask around. I mean, if you Google whatever you're looking for, you'll come across review sites. I tend to say to people, you know, ask around. Obviously, it's great if you can work with someone like me who will help you shortlist. But once you have a little shortlist and you're trying to decide, speaking to other people who've used it is useful. And the other thing I always do is kind of to try out their support. So put in a support ticket. So take on a free trial and then submit some questions to their support team and see how they respond. It always gives me great confidence if you get a quick, very friendly, very helpful, personal response. And you can really tell a lot about a company from that. And I think that's really important because, you know, you will have questions or something might go wrong or they'll change some functionality. You want to know that there's somebody who's going to be there who's actually interested in helping you with that. So that's really important.
That's such a great piece of advice. Seriously, I didn't even think about it, but it's important so much.
Yeah, it makes a huge difference. So I always do that.
All right, Francesca, I think we need to wrap up because it's getting out of any boundaries, and we can probably talk another hour about different tools.
Oh, easily, yes.
But thank you so much for joining us today. If you were to give one piece of advice, what people should do when putting together their, you know, workflow or toolbox, and one mistake they should avoid making, what that would be?
What to do? Keep it simple. I challenge you to put together a toolbox with the fewest number of tools you can get away with. What not to do? Stop reading all the blog posts entitled 25 Essential Tools You Need to Run Your Business because you will spend way too much time on those and not make any progress.
That's great. Sounds amazing. So, Francesca, where can people find you online and where can they sign up for your teardowns?
They can go to productivityteardown.com to find out more about the teardown. They can go to digitaldragonfly.co.uk to find out more about my services and look out for my free 5-day course going from tech overwhelm to productivity.
Sounds great. Once again, thank you so much for joining us today and for sharing your advice. I think keeping it simple is a really good point, but being informed is also important, and you really helped out with that.
Cool. Thank you so much for having me, Jane.
Thank you, Francesca. Have a great day.
Thank you.